Accession number 18676, Reel 7.
I said, if I find that, ever find you having anything any different, he said, I'll put you on a charge. Oh, I thought, this is going to be great. Anyway, from there, he went over to the officer's cookhouse. Well, he wasn't so much interested in that, because if they couldn't look after themselves, it was a bad job. And with that, he went back to the hospital cookhouse. And he put his whites on. Because unlike Johnny Hall, he had his white trousers and coat and he put them on. I went back to the hospital. And that was it. Well, there was no difference in grub next day. That day. But next day, you could see the improvement in the grub immediately. Really was. It was amazing what one man could do. On the Wednesday was the CO's big inspection, when he went round everything in the hospital. Every ward, every department, cookhouse, the lot, even the latrines. And I was taking him round, because it was my job to take him round late. And we got to the cookhouse. Well, as we approached it, the smell was beautiful. It was just like somebody cooking a dinner at home. And when we went in, there was a Sergeant Reed and his three cooks. And he was just lifting a joint of meat out of this oven. It was a clay oven, you know, that you built yourselves. And I'm not kidding, it was a square of meat like that. And about like that. Beef. And it looked beautiful. And I remember Colonel Waite saying, my goodness, he said, what would our wives say if they could see a joint of meat like that? And we'd never seen a joint like that while Johnny Hall was cook. So what had been happening to it, how we'd ruined it, or what, I just don't know. Anyway, it was marvellous, was a grub from then on. Compare it, you know, with the ration we had. And if he wanted anybody to help in the cookhouse, potatoes were the big bugbear. He only had the three cooks and himself. And as you can imagine, trying to cook for 200 was quite a job. And what he used to do, about 9:30, he'd come down and see me and say, look, can you get me some volunteers for cookhouse? I'd say, I'll see what I can do. And he used to go into ward, either medical or surgical ward. So I want some volunteers for cookout, up to 6. And I were very loath to come forward. And the first morning I got 3. And I said to Bob, I said, I'm sorry, I said, I'm going to get 3 volunteers. Oh, he says, that's all right, just let me come down with you, will you? So we walked into this first ward, and it was a medical ward. And he says, I want 3 more volunteers. He says, I've got 3, but he says, I need 3 more. He says, it's for peeling potatoes. He says, I know that doesn't sound very exciting, but he says, either we get the potatoes peeled. He says, or you get them boiled in the jacket. He says, it's up to you. So with that, of course, like we got as many volunteers as we wanted. And he always made sure that there was a sandwich of some sort and a cup of tea for them round about 10:30. And of course the word spread round the hospital then. And there's never any trouble getting these volunteers. Anyway, things went like this. And there was an empty building, not within a couple of 100 yards of where the hospital was. Anyway, the Sergeant Major, this Taffy Williams, this is one good thing he did do. He made some inquiries of the WOG, who was more or less looking after the villas. And he found out that this was a theatre that had never been used. It had been built, but it had never been used. So the Sergeant Major got the keys off him and we went in. And there was a stage, and there was no seating, but there was a stage, and so we got the sappers, the REs, we had two with us, who look after the generators, the petter generators, and they got them cracking on rigging up lighting. We got forms and such like out of stores, not our stores, the depot stores. And the sergeant major even went into Cairo himself and he bought this material for the curtains out of his own pocket. So we had this concert, grand opening concert. All the lads had been practicing, Ives and Company, Dental Corps, and even the sergeant's mess mucked in. And we did a sketch taking off the sisters. Of course, I got volunteered to be the sister. Anyway, we had a grand opening night. And it was a fabulous concert for amateurs. Really was. And then a fortnight later, we got the sisters. And we also, I don't know how it happened, but a concert party from Alexandria, and it was run by a church, offered to come up and give us a show. And we were only too thankful, so we thought, oh yes, please. And they brought this show, and they were all, well, they were chiefly Swiss with the girls, living in Egypt, of course, but most of the parents were either officials in banks or embassies, etc. And oh, there was a lot of lovely girls there, and their dresses were out of this world. And I always remember there was a vicar, there was a sketch that they did, and it was a vicar. And oh, he was fabulous, was this vicar. And he took the mickey out of the church somewhat wrong. And we, you know, we got a great round of applause. And then we found out afterwards, he was the vicar. He was the vicar in charge of him. But I always remember that concert party. Because, of course, you never got the chance of meeting European women. They're not like that. They didn't just want to know you. I mean, we were the scum of the earth, the army, nothing. In fact, anything below a captain they didn't want to know, really. Anyways, I say we stayed there. And unfortunately, I don't know why, I didn't take many photographs there. I've only got about four photographs, and it's of us the afternoon that we were doing the final touches to this sketch. And that's about all we've got. However, as I said, we lost all the equipment. And so they must have been having a real deep thought about this at GHQ. And they decided to make us mobile. And that meant giving us enough transport to move us independently. And this transport would stay with us all the time. And towards the end of August, beginning of September, this RESC, I don't know whether it was a platoon or what it was, but they gradually started arriving in dribs and drabs. And we finished up, we had a captain, I think it was a captain, in charge of them. And all told, we had 62 wagons. That was three tonners, 1,500 weights. Staff cars, petrol bowsers, well not petrol bowsers, water bowsers, staff cars, etc. And all told, we had 62 vehicles. During September, we started receiving stores again, this famous G1098 1248. And we were told not to open them, but to load them straight onto these wagons, which we did. And we couldn't get them on, because it sent us these hospital marquee extending tents again, and they were tremendous things, and they took up a heck of a lot of room, and they weighed, oh, Christ knows how much they weighed. So it was decided we would leave them at Ikingham and Runford time being. And we moved up the coast end of September, beginning of October, to a place called Eldaba, between Alexandria and Mersey Matruh. All it was a little railway station, a halt on the railway line. There was no village there or hotels, but it was called Eldaba. And we went down towards the coast. It was about, what, a couple of miles from the railway track. And we went down there and we started experimenting, trying to make ourselves a mobile CCS. Well, when these hospital marquee extending tents were no good to us, they then issued us some 60-foot square tarpaulins. And the idea was that you draped one of these over the back of your three-ton lorry that was carrying your ward equipment, and you pegged it out from there so that you had a sort of tent held up by the back of a three-ton wagon, so that your equipment was in the wagon, what you hadn't actually got out for use. Oh, the other thing was we were a 200-bedded casualty clearing station, so they took all the beds off us by 50. So we were then 50 beds and 150 stretchers, which of course cut down the bulk and the weight tremendously. Then we started sorting the stores at the same time, while one lot were experimenting with these tarpaulin, and oh, they were brutes. And they were no good at all. You just couldn't make them light tight. Which was no good to us because, I mean, we operated 24 hours a day. I mean, you were admitting and discharging all the time. So that was scrubbed. And they then settled on these tents. And there were these square tents with a double ridge, a double fly, for protecting from the heat. And they were called European Personnel Indian Pattern, EPIP for short. They're always known as EPIP tents after that. Now, they'd be what? Maybe 14 foot square. And they weren't big enough, you see, for wards. You could get eight stretches in. But it was going to take up too much orderly, too many orderlies to look after them. Pardon me. Anyway, we were experimenting, trying to figure out what we could do. And I don't know who it was. Can't remember to this day who it was. But somebody got the bright idea of brigading them together. And what you did, you erected one tent, and then you erected the next one so that it was overlapping by about a foot. But you left the fly sheets and everything loose, so that you just had the inner canvas. And then you brigaded the first tent up to the second tent. And you could do this ad lib for as much as you liked. And you could make them any shape or size that you wanted. Anyway, we found out by trial and experiment that the best was four tents brigaded together to make a ward, and you could get 40 stretches in one of these wards, which was just what we wanted. You could run it then with your normal complement of orderlies. And best of all, you could get everything that ward needed, stretches, the lot, and the tentage, and the orderlies, onto a three-ton truck. Well, that was just the job. In the meantime, they were sorting out the stores. Oh, we can do without this, we can do without that. Sorting it all out to make us really light. And this took over a month of real hard graft. And the last week we were there, it was November, We'd more or less got it sorted all out, so we did two or three trial runs. That was pack everything up as it was going to be used, and go and travel 2 or 3 miles, that was all, and then open up, and then pack up and come back again. Very tedious, but at least it learnt us how to practically do it without thinking. And also, they had all sorts of conferences, did the officers and the senior NCOs, for the layout of a hospital. And what the old man wanted, this Colonel Waite, and it was a real good idea, and it stuck for the rest of the rest of our time in the army. And he got this plan laid out, as we'd all discuss and everything else, for the hospital. And it didn't matter where we went. Naturally, the staff car was there in the head, leading off first. And wherever he planted the little triangular Red Cross flag on a 6-foot flagpole, that was the site of the orderly room. And from that, everybody knew where to go. They didn't need telling, and the layout of the hospital was always the same, and about the same distance apart, maybe a yard or two difference depending on what the site was like. But of course, in the desert, I mean, you weren't bound by buildings or all like that. You'd all the space in the world, and this we did. And literally, we could pull into a place, and in 3 hours, we could be fully opened and ready to receive patients. And it was all done individually. All the lads, you know, all the different wards, they all knew just exactly where to go and what to do. And that was it. And the sergeants and corporals, etc., they just used to, you know, give a hand or any snags or all like that sort of mouth. And it did, it worked really well. Anyway, the 11th of November, I always remember the date, of course, because it was Armistice Day. And was it that week or the week before, the clocks were to alter, because we were still doing this summertime business. And so to fool the jerry, we didn't alter the time. So that if he found out anything that was going to happen at 11 o'clock, it was just too bad. It wasn't 11 o'clock, it was 10 o'clock. And anyway, on the 11th of November, that was it. Packing, we're moving. Ready for Auchinleck's push, second push. Now this time, we went down into the desert. We went down about 70 miles to the border. And the border between Egypt and Libya was marked by this barbed wire fence. And it was about 12, or it would be all of 12 foot wide, and about 10 foot high. And it ran right from the coast, oh, literally 200 or 300 miles down into the desert. And we went down, as I say, about 70 miles. And the sappers in, not only getting ready for this push, but in Wavell's push, had cut gaps in the wire, about 14 or 15 foot wide, you know, so you could pass troops through. And these gaps were numbered. And ours was gap 72. And we got there about a day and a half later. But we didn't open up. We just sat there. And then on on November the 18th, the push started. Auchinleck's push. And we moved through the wire, through this. No, we didn't, telling a lie. Oh, that's right. We hadn't opened up. The push started, and then they told us to open up. Well, I thought that was daft. We could have been opened up before. And anyway, best known to the cell. And we opened up. Anyway, cut a long story short, the push was partly successful at first, and then we moved through this gap in the wire, and we moved up, and we were opening up and casualties through. Marshall, we were taking casualties at this gap 72. And strangely enough, it's you couldn't credit it, could you? The first person we got in, the very first casualty, was a tank corps. I think it was a corporal. And he'd been badly burned. They took him into operating theatre, and they cleaned him up and everything else, and they brought him back into post-op ward. Now, we used to have a theatre, a pre-op ward attached to the theatre, operating theatre, and a post-op ward of 10 beds, not stretchers, beds. We got him into there. And then when he started to come round, the first thing we wanted was a feeding cup to give him a drink of water. And we'd discarded all the drinking cups in this sort out of equipment. So we hadn't any feeding cups. So what we did, we got some rubber catheters, rubber tubing, and cut the ends off them. They were brand new, of course, they just cleaned them, washed them and such like. And that was all we did, but it just shows you how little things like that can affect you. Anyway, we were up and down, advancing and retreating about 10 or 15 miles and then back again. And then this particular night, there was such a racket. And when we went out, it was tanks. And they come charging through the hospital. And of course, we had our two generators there going. And they cut the cables to ribbons. Well, everybody was playing out. Oh, man. Anyway, we didn't find out till after they'd gone. There were Jerrys. And there were Jerry tanks. And they broke through. And the powers that be had decided to let them roam and run out of petrol. But by God, it frightened us to death. We thought they were our tanks and that they, you know, more or less got lost. And we were frightened of them running down wards. But they didn't. How they managed it, I just don't know. But they didn't do any damage to the wards at all. But I'll guarantee there was 20 or 30 tanks came through. Anyway, we gradually moved up. They gradually got it sorted out. Oh, there was another lush up. And the ADDMS, Assistant Director of Medical Services, was a chap called Parrott, a Brigadier Parrott. And he came to hospital one morning. And as I say, I was ward master. And he says, what's your bed state, Sergeant? I said, we've only got two empty stretchers. I said, we've 198 occupied. I said, and two empty. I said, we haven't been able to get a motor ambulance convoy, RASC motor ambulance convoy today. There's no evacuation at all today. Oh, right. And he got his little notebook out. He says, I must make a note of that. I mustn't send you any patients today then, must I? I said, no, sir. And away I went. And believe me, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the ambulance started. And you could see him approaching us. And I thought, well, what's on here? And I'm not kidding. We were inundated with ambulances. And we finished up that you couldn't get within a quarter of a mile of us for parked ambulances, all full of patients. And we finished up. We couldn't unload them because we'd nowhere to put them, so we were treating them in the ambulances, and any that were really serious and needed operations, we were taking them out and such like. But we're, after they'd been operated on, we're having to put them back in the ambulance because we'd just no room. And it finished up after the camp, when we got all sorted out next morning and started evacuating. We'd had over 600 patients come in, and we had 200 to start with. If I could have got my hands on him, I'd have rocked his blasted neck, I would really. Anyway, we went from there, and we then went on half rations. It was bad enough as it was, but we then went on half rations. The idea was that we were approaching Tobruk, and they were conserving rations for Tobruk when they relieved Tobruk. And this lasted for about 8 days while we were gradually working our way up there. And when we met up with them, they'd more grub than what we had. Again, another lash up. Anyway, we didn't stay at Tobruk. We skirted Tobruk, El Adam. We opened up at El Adam aerodrome, near the aerodrome, and then we pushed on. And just before end of November, beginning of December, no, telling a lie, beginning of December, about maybe end of first week, it was winter, of course, and although it was Egypt, it got very, very cold in winter, and at night it could actually freeze, and it started raining, and the heavens opened, and of course it was bogging tanks down and everything, and it slowed up the advance and everything else. Anyway, come, I'll just remember, Christmas Eve, and we're about 10, El Adam was about 10 miles as a crow flies from Tobruk. And then we got orders, Derna, and open up immediately. And by it rained. And I was on to spare wheel of a 3-ton truck that was carried between the cab and the canvas back, and I was sat on there. But it was cold. Anyway, it was just getting dark when we got to Derna, and of course we moved straight into Hospital Princess Piedmont, where we'd been. We started opening up straight away. Mind you, this time we were in buildings, so we didn't have to erect any tents. But we had to get our medical stores out of trucks and into the correct wards, and we were doing that till way after 10 o'clock at night. And next day, Christmas Day, no rations. The ration truck had gone for the ration and we'd moved and they hadn't caught us up. So I always remember that Christmas Day. We had bully beef and biscuits about 10:30 in the morning. We had bully beef and biscuits again at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and that was it. Anyway, luckily, the ration truck arrived about 10 o'clock next morning. So we did get a decent meal. And in the meantime, the quartermaster, this Lieutenant Luckwell, he'd gone down into Derna. And he'd done a bit of bartering, and he'd got a pig, which they'd killed for him, and dressed, and two or three other bits and pieces that he'd bartered. So on the, not Boxing Day, but the day after, we had a real good blowout. After we got settled, and operating all right, you know, 2 or 3 days. I went down into town, and it had been knocked about something shocking now. And I went into market place, and the photographer's shop was still there, but there was nothing in it. It was absolutely bare. Anyway, I went in, and this wog was still there. So I pulled up my cabinet. We got them. Ah, yes. And he had it hidden under floorboards. And he'd developed it, but he hadn't got it printed before the juries arrived. So he'd hidden it under floorboards. And it had been there from April to December. And he couldn't print it because he'd no printing paper. What the juries hadn't taken while they were stationed there, they'd whipped a lot as they were moving out. So I've got some photographs that were 9 months in jury hands, really. And I'll say which they are when we come to show them. Anyway, I think that's enough talking for now. And